Hello to you, O glorious ape descendant, and welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. It is I, Duncan Trussell, and I am truly honored that you have allowed your miraculous attention to temporarily shine upon the sound waves that make up this podcast, because you are the descendant of countless generations that have managed to survive tiger attacks, quicksand, forest fires, and lightning strikes, not to mention the Black Plague, HIV, World War I, World War II, the War of 1812, the Roman Empire, barbarians, medieval pirates, modern pirates, and another billions of other terrible threats, including saber-toothed tigers, fanged bats, tentacled Cthulhu creatures from the darkest pits of hell that have from time to time clambered out of the fiery cracks of the earth and dragged children into the briny, burning lava where they live in the pit of the earth, feeding off the fear that popular culture and mainstream media loves to juice out of the weak like vinegar out of the sponge that the Romans tortured Jesus with. Don't be tortured by the vinegar sponge. Don't believe the nonsense that the multi-tentacled, multi-eyeballed fear demons are throwing at you as you sit at the base of the Bodhi tree, which is actually your spine, meditating and contemplating the truth of your existence, which is that you and everything you do is a miracle. It's a miracle that you're alive. And every day you should thank the lack of olfactory senses that allowed your ancestors to somehow become sexually aroused when their genitals probably smelled like five-day-old spam that had been left to ferment in the bottom of a soldier's boot. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible.com is the finest dispensary of audiobooks available on planet Earth. It has been compared to a holy cow from which the people of the Earth can milk its sacred nipples into their ears. Only instead of producing ear milk, it produces audio glory. At Audible.com, they send astronauts into heaven and chain angels down to torture devices, forcing them to read these beautiful audiobooks, which are available to you. And if you go to audibletrial.com/family hour, you will get a free audiobook. I just downloaded Cloud Atlas, a free audiobook. Think of that. Just for signing up for a temporary trial, you get a free audiobook, and I get $15. So go do it. audibletrial.com/family hour. Sign up. We're also brought to you by Shore Design T-shirts. Shore Design T-shirts is a t-shirt company that produces t-shirts that are so soft that serial killers refuse to use them to gag and strangle their victims, because the victims actually enjoy the pleasure of being choked to death by these soft and wonderful shirts. These shirts are in fact not made of fiber, cotton, or any material on Earth. They are made of billions of fairies that are holding hands, and that forms the fabric of the shirt. And if these fairies let go, then their parents at Shore Design T-shirts, the factory, will be tortured and killed, and they know this, so they hold on tight. And that's why these shirts are so soft. So why not go to shoredesigntshirts.com and check out these amazing shirts? And if you put my name, Duncan, in, you'll get 10% off. A gigantic thank you to all of you who have been donating to the podcast. Thank you to all of you who are buying items from the shop, which helps support the podcast. And thank you to all of you who are using our Amazon portal to buy stuff through Amazon, because Amazon gives us a cut whenever you do that. And thank you to all of you who are just listening. And thank you to all of you who are coming to my shows and saying hello to me. I'm going to be in Portland and Seattle this week, so please come to those shows. Portland on Wednesday, Seattle on Tuesday. If you go to DuncanTrussell.com, you can get tickets there, and you should get tickets because every single show on this tour has sold out, which is an incredible miracle for me, and kind of makes me feel like I've probably been in some kind of horrible car accident and having a hallucination that results from lack of blood as my life slowly fades into nothingness. But regardless of whether or not this is actually happening or I'm just on the side of the road about to go into my final death seizure, I'd love to see you at these shows. So please come and say hello. Now, without further ado, I would like you all to not only send out your psychic tendrils, but blast this man's mouth full of the jizz of your astral bodies. I want him to wake up in the middle of the night sputtering because his mouth is filled with ectoplasm. He's a dear friend of mine. His name's Johnny Pemberton. He's been on the podcast this is his third time on the podcast. He's also the host of his own podcast, which is hilarious, called Twisting the Wind. He's a hilarious comedian and an all-around amazing servant of the force of love in the universe. So please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, the magnanimous Johnny Pemberton. Johnny Pemberton.
Charleston Chew. Check, check.
Check, check, check.
Candlebox.
Candlebox 17.
Hot David. Hot David.
Wax on David.
Wax. Rattle tat.
Can we get some wax on David, please?
Can we get some David's wax, please?
Ooh. That's a thing that, like, a perverted photographer says.
Hey, can we get some wax on David? David's looking... No, we need him more shiny. No, no. We need him... We need David more shiny. No. You understand? No. David, no. Can we get some of that body glove?
just get. God damn it! Where's the fucking lube? Get it into David.
Where's the aqua? What's it called?
David. Stay still.
David, I don't want you sweating. I want fake sweat. Where's the aquaphoresis?
Spray David with sweat.
Do you have the aquaphoresis? Is that what they're calling it now?
Yes.
Give me some of that aquaphoresis.
Bottle boar sweat.
Bottle, ooh.
Someone spray David with a bottle boar sweat. And
someone
then
get David ready.
Is there any way to get David ready?
Where's David's double? can we double David, please?
Dude, but is there anything in the world more creepy than an erotic photographer who wants to take pictures of you and your girlfriend?
I have bad opinions of photographers. So I kind of feel like it's this, it's the artist that history didn't ever have. It's, you know, you're like, it's too easy to be an artist if you're a photographer. They're everywhere. Photographers are everywhere. It's a modern, it's a technological art form. It's only 10% of photographers are like real artists.
No, I think it's like a lot of guys use it to try to get girls let them take pictures of their boobs.
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing where if you have a technological device between
a woman,
she'll take her clothes off. But if you're like, would you mind taking your clothes off so I can remember what you look like naked?
Well, you could say you're a painter. You could like say, I want to paint you.
That's fine. Somehow if you reproduce the image of a naked woman into matter, it's okay.
Right.
But if you're like, I just want to look at you and remember this image.
Look and touch.
Do you mind if I just look and touch?
No, I don't mind.
I'm going to paint a memory of you into my brain. I paint my canvases with memory.
You do? You a memory painter?
No, but if you said that to a girl, there's no way she's going to be like, oh, sure, I'll take my clothes off.
She'd be like, well, can I take my clothes off? Because I don't want you to paint from memory. You'll probably get it wrong. You'll get the boobs wrong.
No, not even paint. I'm saying if you say, I'm going to look at you and then paint, even that's better.
Yeah, that's better.
But somehow it's not okay to just look.
Do you know why it's better? It's because you can't hide artistry in painting. Where you take a picture, it's like you can any idiot can take a picture and throw it into Photoshop and throw some filters on there and be like, oh, look at that.
Oh, yeah. Well, the whole point is, Watch out for photographers, people.
Watch out,
because they will fuck you up. Man, I still will never forget the time when I was dating Natasha. Mm-hmm.
Who's that?
No,
I don't know. I know
shut
who
up.
It is.
When I was dating Natasha, right. I got an email from, I can't remember her name, but she's like, my friend's an erotic photographer, and he'd really like to take pictures of you and Natasha.
Really? So he wants to have you like naked and embracing, probably. Is that what it was?
No, he wanted to fuck Natasha.
Oh, but he wanted you to be involved in this, at least.
Right? I mean, it starts like that, I guess. Like, just think about
how
that.
Do you think it would have gone down?
How you would,
it would think if you said yes? Imagine
okay,
you said
if
yes.
I said yes, the way it would have gone down is mm-hmm. what I would have put, like been like, Natasha, you want to go get an erotic pictures? And be like, no.
Let's say she said yes.
Okay, then what would have happened is we would have gone over to this guy's weird fucking studio,
his house.
He'd be like his house,
his bedroom.
He'd be like covered in patchouli.
You think so?
He'd be like, I just want you guys to relax. Mm-hmm. I want hey. You know what? I'd love to see you guys.
What can I get you? What can I get you? Pepsi? You wanna, Pepsi. I got. Well, let's say what I just shot. I just did a diet cherry Pepsi shoot last week. I am loaded up. So take a bunch. Got a backpack here. Borrow this one. Take a bunch.
I love that this character that you're making is kind of like what's spooky about him is how normal he is.
He has bad taste too. Loves diet cherry Pepsi.
Come in. Do you got? What do you guys? I just picture it more like.
Hey. No, I know what you're saying.
Hey, guys, come in. What, you want to relax? I got some Xanax if you guys want to relax
a little
bit.
Oh, you're not into that? Me neither. Yeah, I just, for flying, you know. those red eyes to Madrid, God.
So what do you guys do normally? Like, how do you guys start making out? Do you just start kissing first or whatever?
I just want to make it comfortable for you.
I want to just really take pictures of what actually happens with you two.
I'm just a net. You're the fish. I'm just a net, okay?
Yeah.
So just, this is the water. Flop around, and I'm going to get my net out, and okay?
Then uncomfortable laughter, like if you did an uncomfortable laughter, like, he's like, yeah, I know. I know it's uncomfortable, this is weird, but look, this is the most natural thing in the world.
Duncan, I can tell you right now that if you could see this, Duncan, it's amazing. Duncan, do you want to go to the car real quick and just grab some different shoes?
Yeah. Duncan, here's what I like to do with the artist. I'm going to sit with Natasha for a while.
Yeah, we're going to vibe because I got a surprise for you when you come back, okay? Just wait out there. Cindy will be with you for just about an hour or two, okay? Just a couple, 2 hours. You got time, right? Okay, here's some. You parked at the meter?
Jesus Christ. There's so many.
It didn't happen. So you knew.
It didn't happen, but it's amazing how there are so many predatory beings that exist
especially
in the world.
In this place. Yeah. I think we talked about this very same thing last podcast. We're in the risk of rehashing an old...
I don't think we talked about this.
No, we did. We talked about an old predatory man in the Hollywood Hills who comes down and poaches young, stupid writers who hang out at gas stations trying to hawk their non-book with like spacing of a...
I don't remember that.
16-point font. I remember this because I was telling you a story about how I read this book that some actor dude was hawking at the gas station on Santa Monica, and someone.
Why do
it.
I want to talk about predators when I'm around you?
I don't know. Maybe just talk more about predator drones. Drones,
that'd be,
baby.
That'd be suck if they. Imagine that if they had drones that molested you. That would be the worst. Oh, like,
hey, have you ever read Fahrenheit 451?
Yes,
I just read it very recently, so it's very fresh in my mind. Do you remember the dogs in that book? There's these robotic dogs that will chase you. The hounds. They're called hounds. And they have these needles in their nose. And when they get you, they inject you, I believe, with morphine, like a fatal dose of morphine. And have you seen those videos of those fucking the running robots,
yes.
You know? Those are so creepy.
Have you seen the new tarantula robot?
I've seen that, yeah. It's so fucking creepy.
But here's the funny thing about predator drones that molested you.
Right.
Here's the funny thing. I think it's an important thing to point out that if we made predator drones,
which we already do,
that had on them phalluses, so they would fly down and they had like kind of like hose or tentacles, they would like wrap around you. They would like wear whatever.
They'd violate you.
They would violate whatever. Like they have like oily phalluses that secrete like cow fat. So it's like there's an organic component. Uh-huh. They land on you. They will mouth fuck
you.
Do you
think Obama would approve this?
They will. No, wait. Here's the funny thing. If we deployed those,
right,
and they started raping the Taliban, so all of a sudden the Taliban is like one of the dangers when you're walking down an African.
You might get raped.
You might
robot
get
raped.
Robot raped.
Yeah.
The outrage of the world
would be outrageous.
Would be like, what the fuck? The United States is evil. Meanwhile, blowing the people up is like, well, you know, it's war.
Right. I don't think the United States would say that they did that, though. I think it would be one of those things where they deny that this is something that they've done.
But that's not the point. The point is our fucking culture is so fucked up. I mean, that's what's weird about it.
Well, that's what's so fucked up about those fucking running robots that DARPA is making. Those are DARPA projects. That means it's the defense. I don't know what it stands for, but it's a federal Defense Department research, right? DARPA.
Yes.
So these fucking, you see those running robots? They're fucking running at 20 miles an hour, and they're actually running. And just imagine that, like those hounds in Fahrenheit 451. Those things are designed. They're designing these fucking robots so they can sick them on you. Oh, it's for a search and rescue. You know, if you find a lost kid, that's the best. Is when they always say the reasons for research, like they'll never get used.
Oh yeah.
Like, oh no, it's for you know, if you gotta find
cave-ins.
Yeah,
it's for cave-ins.
Yeah, getting those.
The reason we want to develop this remote control robotic spider with razors on the very tips of its
with like a penis razor.
The penis razor is for miners.
Run 60 miles an hour.
We need a metallic titanium robot that run 60 miles an hour, because when miners get trapped,
yeah, we gotta send that guy in there. And
we just, that's
hearts and minds.
The best way to get into a mine is with a rolling silver orb that shoots that out a propeller.
Out ooh, like what's that movie Phantasm? You ever seen that?
The Phantasm orb.
Pretty great. The Phantasm orb is scary.
Because it extracts your blood, right?
That's, I don't remember. Whatever it is, it's pretty gruesome. It's definitely the best aspect of that movie franchise.
Phantasm was so fucking cool.
It's pretty
cool.
Great. Yeah. It looks good. Have you ever seen that movie Fiend?
No.
Ooh.
What's that about?
Alien Factor?
Nope.
This is going to go on the recommendations. Alien Factor. This is two movies this guy made. They're like total B-movies, but they're, I don't know how to describe it. They're very interesting looking because he does a lot of things where he's drawing on the film to do these practical effects. They're made in the 70s. And Alien Factor is really cool. It's super, super cheesy in terms of all the dialogue, but it's something about it has like this really cool look that's it's highly psychedelic.
Do you remember like what the dialogue was?
Yeah, I used to have it as my voicemail. It was like, oh, that alien ship over there sure won't last in this sunlight. Or it's like, ah, hey, Buck.
Weird.
Buck, what is that? Yep, that's the alien probe down. Just very like casual alien dialogue kind of stuff. At least that's what I remember of. I haven't seen it in a while. It's about time I checked it out again. Check that Alien Factor.
That is a something that I guess we're never going to get to experience.
What, like, movies?
When I was a kid, I really felt certain that we would make alien contact by now.
What you don't think we have?
You mean like secret alien contact?
Yeah.
Do you think we have?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say because I don't know. But I think there's probably been some sort of very minimal kind of thing happened, maybe, right?
Like what? Like a letter?
Who's to say? Maybe not a letter. Maybe like a beeping. Like a certain beeping that came from far away.
They say that. I know.
Maybe not two-way. Maybe not two-way, but maybe something where it's like, okay, we definitely know this is not from
us. Didn't Buzz Aldrin say that there's a goddamn monument up on the moon or some kind of structure on the moon?
See, that kind of stuff always bugs me because that stuff is so, you know what I mean? When people talk about stuff as filtered through the lens of humanism, everything, like all aliens have two arms, even though they don't look like people,
right.
They're still like humanoid.
Yeah.
The idea that there's going to be humanoid things doing the things that humans do to represent aliens is such bullshit. It's such like 50s, you know.
Backward. Well,
you're looking at something from like a very, it's definitely a viewpoint as opposed to looking at something from far away.
But it depends. It depends on what you consider alien. Like if you
that's true.
If you consider alien, because there's a difference between alien and extraterrestrial.
Right. So I guess, you could say.
Because you could just say that there's like, here's a really fascinating thing. Have you ever seen the drawing of the demon that Aleister Crowley summoned? Have you ever seen that drawing?
No.
Okay, hold on. I'll show you right now. This will be in the Go Deeper section at
DuncanTrussell.com. Well, I have some good soundtrack
for this. I'm going to pause this right now.
Don't pause it. I have a good soundtrack for it.
It's not going to. Yeah, so supposedly while that's playing, as I'm looking this up, Aleister Crowley did some kind of like really complicated ritual and ended up summoning this being, and he drew a picture of it.
And what does it look like?
The picture happens to look exactly like the gray aliens look, but this is way before people were reporting the contact with gray aliens. Lamb, his name was Lamb, L-A-M, and I'll show you the picture.
L-A-M. Don't you think, though, that some of that stuff is just, it's like collective consciousness kind of thing? Oh, wow. It does look like a gray.
Yeah.
Jeez.
It's fucking weird. So, like, Crowley summoned a gray. And this is, like, this is the...
Or even a gray.
This is the idea that... and it gets into what you're saying, which is like, well, we can't humanize extraterrestrials or aliens.
Right.
But the idea is if it's an advanced intelligence, the way they're going to communicate with us is...
It's going to be through us.
Through us.
Yeah.
And as us.
Through us and as us. And they show themselves in a way that we can comprehend, which is humanoid.
Yeah.
Or like through physical statues, things like that. Yeah, it makes sense, I guess. But there's no way... At some point, you really... You have to boil it down to decide what is what. Is it human or is it alien? And how do you do that?
Well, it depends. I mean, it's like, first of all, is it human? I think if you're Aleister Crowley and you summon a weird little fucking dude.
Right.
Is that a human? I don't know that they call it. They call it, it could be a person.
Yeah.
But maybe it's not
a
human.
An entity? How about that?
It's an entity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an entity.
It's an entity. Hmm. And that you can like, and this is the idea. The idea is that throughout time, people are going to call aliens different things. Some people are going to like, or another way to put it is that what we are calling aliens, when people see these grays, the word we're using now for them is aliens. But there's been a million different words for them.
But all this stuff hasn't really changed. I think a lot of it all has to do with just collective consciousness, even if it's not aliens at all, because it's this thing where people, you know, there's all these people who are really into UFO research and who show all these, oh, there's a tapestry from the 1200s that clearly depicts these orbs in the sky, but during those different time periods when people have these sightings, things have looked different because that was in the collective conscious at the time. That is what, like, the societal dream was. That's what was going on. And that's the societal subconscious idea.
So you've read the book of Ezekiel, the alien encounter in the Bible.
I haven't, no.
Okay, hold on. Let me read it. Let me read a verse from the book of Ezekiel, the
pausing
prophet.
For Ezekiel.
And now a reading from the book of Ezekiel, the prophet, from Johnny Pemberton.
Yes. Yes.
Just start in the beginning.
Ezekiel was a priest, the son of Buzi.
Shitty man.
Well, here's it. That's why this is happening. Who lived with the Jewish exiles besides the Chebar Canal in Babylon. One day late in June, when I was 30 years old, the heavens were suddenly opened to me and I saw the vision of God. I saw in this vision a great storm coming toward me from the north, driving before it a huge cloud of glowing with fire, with a mass of fire inside that flashed continually, and in the fire there was something that shone like polished brass. Then from the center of the cloud, four strange forms appeared that looked like men, except that each had four faces with two pairs of wings. Their legs were like those of men, but their feet were cloven like calves' feet and shone like burnished brass. And beneath each of their wings I could see human hands. The four living beings were joined wing to wing, and they flew straight forward without turning. Each had the face of a man in front, with a lion's face on the right side of his head, and the face of an ox on his left side, and the face of an eagle at the back of his head. Exclamation point. Each had two pairs of wings spreading out from the middle of his back. One pair stretched out to attach to the wings of the living beings on each side, and the other pair covered his body. Wherever these spirits went, they went going straight forward without turning. Going up and down among them were other forms that glowed like bright coals of a fire or brilliant torches. And it was from these that the lightning flashed. The living beings darted to and fro, swift as lightning. As I stared at all this, I saw four wheels on the ground beneath them, one wheel belonging to each. The wheels looked as though they were made of polished amber, and each wheel was constructed with a second wheel crosswise inside. They could go in any of the four directions without having to face around. The four wheels had rims and spokes, and the rims were filled with eyes around their edges. When the four living beings flew forward, the wheels moved forward with them. When they flew upward, the wheels went up too. When the living beings stopped, the wheels stopped. For the spirit of the four living beings was in the wheels, so wherever their spirit went, the wheels and the living beings went there too. The sky spread out above them, looking as though it were made of crystal. It was inexpressibly beautiful. Each being's wings stretch straight out to touch the other's wings. Wow, a lot of wings.
A lot of fucking wings and disks and glowing orbs.
Ooh, baby. That was crazy. I haven't read that before, so.
I mean, that's what we're talking about.
That's a pretty lofty description right there.
A person who doesn't have an experience with, like, an engine or a jet engine or
nothing
is going to use these kinds of descriptions to talk about an alien craft.
Right. It's the same thing as, like, when the Spaniards had their fire sticks, their boomsticks.
Yeah.
Those are just guns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so in the same way, right now, we're still using probably a rudimentary understanding of the universe to try to describe
aliens,
intelligences. Because what we're saying is the way we're doing it, the rudimentary way we're doing it, it's always based on what people know.
Right.
Is how they try to describe something that's bigger than them. Mm-hmm. So right now, what we know is that we're in a solar system.
Right.
That there's other planets. That there's other galaxies with other solar systems. So the way we talk about it now is a being from another planet came and visited me, and he was inside a metal ship that could fly. But still, that's just using
modern. It's our technology.
Yeah,
yeah. Where there's who knows? Maybe it won't be technology that will do it. It's going to be something. I don't think technology could reach that. Not for hundreds. God, it's going to take so long for that to happen. Do you realize how disappointed people are who grew up like 6 years ago? Like, so imagine thinking about the future, how far off we are from what people thought we were going to be at this time. You know, flying cars and like a little box that just makes all your food. Just trying to push, you dial in. I want a cheesy broccoli. Boom.
Yeah.
We don't have any of that shit. We have nothing at all. It's all so rudimentary.
Meanwhile, back then, there was very little, like, predictions of the way the internet is now.
Right.
Or video games.
Well, I just finished this book that's amazing. I think I was telling you about it. It's a William Gibson book called Distrust That Particular Flavor.
Yes.
It is amazing. It's not a book. It's a collection of his essays. And he has a little amendment to each of them. A little, what do you call that? I don't know. A little add-on that he just wrote this year. To kind of describe the essay or what he thinks of what he wrote after 20 or 25, 30 years later. And some of the stuff is amazing because he's talking about, like, I'm reading this essay, I'm like, oh, this sounds like this is written in 2005. No, written in 1995. And he's talking about the internet and, like, he's such a fucking genius, that guy, Gibson.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand how he, because he's also, like, kind of not really into technology himself. He doesn't use a lot of it. He doesn't even have an email address. He only did get an email address so he could use eBay for the first time to buy a bunch of watches, and then he quit. And now he doesn't have an email address again. He considers, also, the way he described surfing the internet, this is something, I think this is 98, one of these essays. He describes it as such a perfect thing where it's like, I wish I could describe it because he's so good with words. Like, his economy of words is ridiculous. He can write like a 500-word essay that is so – it makes you understand something so deep. I just can't reproduce it. But basically, he's talking about how the internet has changed people in a huge way because now you're basically – you're never not working. It's like this thing where if you go to have a cubicle job, a cubicle farm, he basically described the whole idea of – working in a cubicle before farm on a computer before that was really a big thing, and how these all these people, whenever you're using the internet, you're basically interfacing with something. You're being active. You're working.
Yes.
You're not relaxing.
No downtime.
So it's this thing where it's totally changed.
Foraging. I look at it as a form of foraging. What the work is you're foraging for bits of information. Really, what you're doing when you're surfing the internet is you're foraging for novelty. Mm-hmm. You're foraging for little novelty crumbs that you can eat. And each of those little crumbs give you this specific high. They give you this weird little, like, oh. Or sometimes it's like this hypnotic kind of nullification that's really quick, like blips. Like,
it's a little thing that you've never seen before, and all of a sudden you can just have instant access to it. And yeah,
you could almost apply, it's a temporal, it's like
gambling.
It's a but each of these nodes of novelty that you find when you're surfing the internet have a specific temporal potency. So depending on what it is you find, it'll keep your attention absorbed longer.
Right.
So, you know, like, did you see for example, what I see today, a picture of a dog on Reddit, a picture of a dog nuzzling a fawn.
Right.
That's going to have for me, it's interesting, and I'll look at it for like far less than a minute, maybe like 8 seconds.
Oh, I bet you looked at it for a second. One second.
Dog nuzzling. But cat bounce. Have you seen cat bounce on Reddit?
I mean, I can't keep up with cat videos on the internet.
It's not a cat video. It's just a website. Guys, I'll put the link on my site. It's just a website that it's just bouncing cats, and then you can press something that says make it rain,
really?
And it rains more bouncing cats.
So it rains cats and cats.
Yeah. Hmm. So that's got to
right.
That'll keep you for like 30 seconds. But all these different attention magnets or nodes of novelty, they're like miniature singularities for your attention.
Oh, you
that
think so,
suck huh? your attention in for these brief little moments, and then your attention gets released, and then you go to the next thing and the next thing and the mm-hmm. next thing. And that's what surfing the internet is. Surfing the internet is basically allowing your attention to get blowjobs from a variety of different sources, all producing generally the same effect.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely true. I wish I could describe the way he describes it, because it's interesting to hear him say it, because it's like from an outsider's perspective, and the way he describes it is so... That's the thing. I guess that's why I think more about writing is something where sometimes that's the reason you read stuff, is because if I could say that, if I could communicate that idea, I wouldn't need to read that idea. But I definitely can't fucking communicate this idea. It's too complicated for me to communicate, because I'm not as brilliant as William Gibson.
You mean the idea of like constantly doing busy work with yourself?
Basically, yeah. It's basically the fact that there's this thing that is it's inexhaustible amount. It can take. There's no limit to. It's like a pile of wood that just keeps growing. Every time you take a log off.
Yes.
You never make a dent in it. And that's what computers have
done. A fractal. You're talking about a fractal. It's a fractal.
Well, computers have made something, a way for humans to engage with something that is endless. The work is never done. Like, there's some cartoon that's like, this doesn't have anything to do with it, but there's like a cartoon of some guy on a computer and his girlfriend's like, hey, come to bed already. And he's like, no, I can't. Someone on the internet is wrong.
Ah, that's funny.
And that's
That's
there's
right.
never an end to.
There's never an end to it. So, and it's an important thing to recognize that what you have there is maybe in the course of human history, the first perpetually replenishing
work machine.
Not work machine. I'd say it's like an endless glass of wine. It's like a.
It is. I don't think that's if it was wine. I don't think wine is the thing that's coming out of a computer.
Well, no, wine in the sense that it's an intoxicated state that you're getting from engaging in internet surfing.
Yeah.
It's a buzz. You're getting high from it.
I think that sometimes, though, it can also be something that's just like this. It's like a manticle of work. It's like a thing. It's It locks you down because it creates these things that are never finished. If you're talking about games or anything, it's a manticle of sorts.
You mean a manacle?
Yeah, a manacle.
I thought you said manticle.
I think I did. I think I said it wrong.
It's a romantical.
It's romantical.
It's like a pink manacle.
It's a mandible. It's a
it's
mandible.
A pink man- it's
like
a
pink
it's
manacle.
It's a scented manacle.
It's a scented monocle for your nose. It's a double monocle.
It's a monocle manacle.
Yeah.
I think that I just work throws off the way I see it. Like,
well, I think work.
I think
is
it's
like,
quite the opposite of work.
When I say work, I mean work in the most general sense. Like work, like.
You're talking almost like physics,
like you say that a lever does work,
or a
fulcrum
I see what you're saying.
Does work.
It's keeping us engaged in these like loops,
mm-hmm.
and the loops all add up. That time all adds up. So what's really interesting is that
time is the biggest part of it.
As you leap from one of these mild singularities mm-hmm. that sucked your attention into the next, like little eddies. Each time you go to the next one, you're almost resetting. So it's like you can forget that you've just been on the internet for 20 minutes because you found some new thing.
Right.
And then that's another 20 minutes. And then you find some new thing and that's the other 20 minutes. But each new thing is giving the illusion that you're on to some new activity.
It changes time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it always is fresh. Like you said, a new activity. So it's this thing where you've done so much, but you haven't done really anything.
You've done nothing.
Yeah, you've done nothing. So it's this crazy thing that is,
Well, physically, you've certainly done nothing. I mean, yeah. I guess that you've, well, on the other hand, like, you can, I know that when I
get... physically, I think that matters, though.
But when I get really cool, the other component of surfing the internet, aside from the buzz of having your attention, having this distraction mechanism that's right. keeping you in a kind of sedated, hypnotic state, mm-hmm. the other cool thing is the information sharing component. So it's
that's the biggest thing of it.
You're mining for these attention singularities, and then when you find them, you tweet them, and so you do a dandelion effect where once you find the attention singularity, you spread it, mm-hmm. and then you magnify the number of minutes that people's attention are sucked into this vortex. That's when something goes viral. Right. That's what it means, is that it has enlarged and sucked countless hours human attention.
Yeah, that'd be a cool factor to find out, find some sort of equation that could measure the amount of hours that something has taken. I guess you could look at a YouTube video and think of how long a YouTube video is, and then multiply it by the views. That's interesting to think about that. I never thought about
they
that.
They did it with
Gundam style.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
Oh, my God.
How many lifetimes? We can do it right now. We'll do it right now.
Okay, because
we'll do the math right now.
I think it's got like 7. It's got 100 million views at least, maybe 300 million views.
Okay, so let me just get my calculator up. Okay. So let's say, first of all, the question is, how many minutes is Gangnam Style?
I think Gangnam Style is probably a 3-minute pop song.
So let's say it's 3 minutes. Now, guys, these aren't hard numbers. We're just going
to... But 3 is a good number to work with.
Let's say it's 3 minutes.
We should say in seconds, though, shouldn't we? We should say...
No, we can do minutes. 3 minutes, and let's say, how many views has Gangnam Style got?
I think it's got a couple 100 million, right?
So let's just say 200 million. So we're going to go 3 times 200 million, 200...
Well, that's 600 million, right?
Hold on, yeah. Hold on. So that's... No,
600 million periods of 3 minutes.
So 600 million minutes.
So how would you do that? Then you
600 million minutes divided...
600 million...
By 60.
Okay. 600 million minutes. This is, let me tell you the story.
My calculator won't even go this high.
I got stoned. I went to a restaurant.
I have to go to
Wolfram
Ram Alpha. Keep talking.
I went to a restaurant stoned with my girlfriend, a nice restaurant, and we both ate some marijuana before we went out, and we got there, and we're suddenly very stoned, and I've been in this phase now where I want to do the check in my head, not use a calculator, and I felt like I was in a fucking net, like a mental net. I was sweating. I was freaking out because I couldn't figure out these fucking numbers. It was right in the middle of the restaurant. It was fucking killing me.
Yeah, my brain feels like a bag of old lettuce.
It's like a mental net, though. I felt like I was tangled and I couldn't get out. I started to get really stressed out.
Okay, hold on. We're going to pause and find out exactly how many years have gone of attention have gone into Gangnam Style. One moment.
Pause.
We are back. We did a real calculation to figure out how many years of attention has gone into Gangnam Style.
Gangnam Style.
What do we do, Johnny?
We took the number of views, which I believe is 762 about million.
Yes.
762 million views. And we took that, multiplied that by the number of minutes the video is, which is basically four minutes.
4 minutes. And what do we get?
We got 3,048,000,000.
And then we went into Wolfram Alpha, which is this great, if you've never been there, go to wolframalpha.com. You can just type questions into it. So we said, how many years is 3,048,000,000 minutes? And our sweet Wolfram Alpha came back with, that is 5,799 years of human attention
from one
has
video
been sucked into the Gangnam Style singularity.
Whoop, whoop.
5,799. Now, here's something interesting.
Too.
Now, how many lifetimes is that? How many lifetimes is 5,799 years if people live, a 70-year average lifespan?
No, I say 65.
65 years. So what is that? Wait, can you do that in your head,
John?
No,
Johnny? I can't do that.
So 5,799.
I'll enter the net. I'll enter the scary net where I feel trapped.
5,799 divided by 60. Divided by 60.
Think of the number of baths you could take. I bet this has been on the O'Reilly factor. This is something he would be interested in. I'll tell you, do you realize how many years have been spent watching this video?
It didn't come out right.
Didn't work. Well, it doesn't matter.
Who fucking cares? It's a lot of goddamn 5,000 lifetime.
It's more than Joe begat.
So this is where it gets weird.
Right.
What if Gangnam? What if Psy is actually an attention vampire in Gangnam Style? The Gangnam Style video is just an attention capturing device, like
I've
a
heard
solar
this
panel. It's a solar panel for attention.
Yeah. I don't think that is the case, but I think that's a cool what if.
He's converting. Okay, so if you don't want to go there, here's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Gangnam Style,
right,
is definitely an awesome thing. A solar panel for money.
Yeah, but you mean by solar panel like converting the energy of our eyes?
It turns attention into money.
That's what TV is.
Yeah,
movies are everything.
Yeah,
all entertainment's the same thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the point. So mm-hmm. those, in other words, how many years has Gangnam Style been around?
Not years. A month? 2 months?
No. How many years of human attention have poured into...
If we have 5,900 and... Yeah.
5,900 years of human attention poured into Gangnam Style. You can find out how much Gangnam Style is made. And then you have a number where how much mm-hmm. every year of human attention is worth. There's a market for it.
Well, but that's only for that specific thing, though. That's just one of many, many, many hundreds of thousands of pieces of entertainment.
But human attention is worth... There is a number. There's a weird name they have for...
To quantify it?
No, because it's a business where if a person clicks on a link...
Oh, it's like marketing.
It's marketing. So marketing does
that's
have...
That's where the money is.
But there's
that's what the money is. But
there's a fucking number. That's right. Crazy to think.
It's probably an algorithm, right?
There's got to be a market for
Delta 6-9.
There's a market for human attention.
Of course. Well, yeah, there is. That's why there's so much fucking money, and that's why there's so many crazy assholes who go into marketing, because that's where you... I'm only thinking about marketing. It's such a gross thing to think about.
It's amazing.
Sometimes it's gross, though.
It's alchemy.
Well, alchemy is bullshit, though.
Why do you think?
What do you mean? The alchemists, like turning lead into gold?
Fuck turning lead into gold. How about turning attention into money?
I mean, it's actual alchemy.
That's what I'm saying.
I thought you were saying, like, in terms of I was being too literal.
Way too literal. It's an alchemical.
Yeah.
So what it is, what marketing is, marketers are just alchemists who have become experts at transforming human attention into money.
Yeah. You find
I'm
a way
not
to
saying
funnel.
They're good or bad alchemists. I'm just saying these are.
Yeah, they are.
These
are. They're alchemists.
The type of wizards that they are is that they convert human attention into green.
You find the eyes, you get it on the thing, and you get paid to do it.
And I'm not saying that's good or bad. I mean, you're a fucking actor. I mean, that's like...
I know. Well, that's the problem. That's why I think there's so many people have such contradiction in their lives that it's the thing where you can't... You don't like something, but it's also the thing that's keeping you alive. So it's just hard. It's a tough thing. I think it's become more of a modern problem as people have so many contradictions in their lives, and it's hard to rectify that.
No matter what, you're selling your attention. So if you're when you go to work each day, you're selling your attention. Like when you go to work, you're saying, "I'm going to give you my attention to whatever problems there are that you want me to work out throughout the day."
Yeah, well, they bought
for this
my attention.
Amount of money.
Right,
they're buying your attention.
They're buying my attention so they can transmute it into grabbing someone else's.
Right. Well, yeah. Like for example, like let's say you work at McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
You're selling your attention for minimum wage,
right,
to make food.
Because the attention, you don't need that much attention.
Well, to make McDonald's food,
you don't need to capture as much attention as something else.
And yeah, and the money, and so the education is something that apparently makes your attention worth more money.
Yeah.
So master's degree means that your attention is worth far more than someone who doesn't have a master's degree. And a doctor's attention or a psychologist's, a neurologist's attention is so valuable.
Right.
That's
real.
That if you ask a doctor outside of an office for medical advice,
they won't give it to you unless they're nice and normal.
Yeah.
Most doctors will. So most doctors, this is the thing about doctors, is most doctors are good because you have to take a Hippocratic oath and you should be doing, I don't know, I'm only thinking about this stuff. It's so stupid because it's like, there's so many bad doctors, but if you're a doctor, like the doctor, the president should be a doctor because it's like makes sense because they are so they should be really altruistic and have like
oh wait, you're saying that like again, well see again, I don't think that it's a good or bad thing. I mean, I think that like
what's a good or bad thing? The marketing is a good or bad thing?
I think that it can be a bad thing, but I think that it's just it's a normal.
Well, it's
thing.
Like anything. It's not like it's not a.
Well, it's a form of hunting.
It's just a thing. It's not good or bad.
It's hunting. Like the food that part of the economy or part of like what people need to sustain themselves is entertainment. They like it. It's like it's something that like is so.
Well, they don't
important
need it, but they don't need it.
You don't need it, but it's a fucking blast.
Yeah, it's
I mean,
a blast.
God damn, when you go to see, I love that Looper turned some of my fucking attention into money for them. I want them to have money. Or like The Walking Dead, I love giving like talking about The Walking Dead or like helping them out because it's an I like getting my attention.
Oh yeah, everybody does.
Yeah,
it feels good.
It's pleasurable.
It's what makes it. It's why it's entertainment. No, no, we're talking about Duncan. We should argue about something.
No, this
is... Yeah, let's argue.
We don't want to argue.
Yeah, let's get an argument going. No, I have to...
Fucking argue.
I said this before, and I have to rectify this. I told you I was going to bring this up, but you were... I heard you on Joe's podcast talking about me as a peak oiler and how you are different because you're very optimistic about things, right? You're very optimistic about the whole... how that's not going to happen because something will like technology will save us, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
You want to argue about that?
Yeah, I do. Cause I've been thinking more about it lately just for, I don't know. I kind of go in cycles about it, but there's like this thing that is, I feel like it's such a big hole to throw down, but you know, the idea of techno-narcissism.
Yeah, I only know it because you've like sullenly said it to me over the phone a million times.
Well, but it's true. But think about it. Think about it in terms of all these people who have nothing. They don't care about religion. They don't believe in the power of prayer or anything. They're people who are not interested in spirituality. But they'll talk about stuff like, oh, I'm sure that something will come up that will grant us free energy or something will happen. Like they're basically putting their power in the providence of God without actually saying it because they fucking go to the Hollywood Bowl on their Jetta, shop at Trader Joe's. They're not interested in, they don't go to church or anything like that. But it's the same thing as, it's the same. If you want to laugh, they're the same people who typically would laugh at someone who's religious because it's like people make fun of politicians who believe in God and stuff like he also thinks that we didn't come from monkeys, okay? with this guy. So I think it's those same people who are saying that who also have this sort of techno-narcissism and think that it'll be a technological salvation that I just don't think is going to come because that's putting something in providence as opposed to actually doing something to help. It's like the whole thing where you're like, they'll figure it out.
No. I don't think it's a they'll figure it out thing. Like I'll grab Kurzweil's book from back there. He's got mathematical grid based on.
I know he does.
Right. So, but you're acting as though like people are like sitting around smoking a bong and being like, soon there'll be a motherboard that'll save the world.
Well, they are. There are people who are like that.
You're wrong.
What do you think people have any type of...
those fucking people who just made... I can't remember the name of the supercomputer, but it's the largest and most advanced supercomputer that ever existed. Well, are they techno-narcissists?
No, I don't... it depends. I'd have to talk to them and see what they actually think about the future.
A fucking simulator to try to simulate the birth of the universe? Is that techno-narcissism?
That has nothing to do with techno-narcissism. Techno-narcissism has to do with... thinking that everything can be solved with technology,
right?
Then you can, then
but
you can,
no.
Uh,
but the point I'm getting at here is that the every 10 or 15 years, the size, the amount of goddamn space it would take to create this newest supercomputer, which I can't recall,
keeps
the name.
Shrinking. But we're hitting a wall right now because silicon can only be so small, so we have to move into a different type of computing, electron computing.
Which they're having success with.
Okay, here's the thing.
But you see where I'm getting at.
I see what you're getting at.
This isn't something where it's like,
no.
Oh, we think that maybe computers are going to wake up. This is like, they're going to fucking wake up.
They're going
to
wake up.
Do you agree with that?
I think there will be a waking up, but I don't think that has anything to do with the salvation as far as like free energy. I think that is something that...
Here's the thing to get us back to our what we originally started talking about,
right.
Which is that, and I don't remember who said this, is a great quote, which is that human beings' first contact with an alien is going to be through a sentient computer that they woke up.
Right.
So
which makes sense. Yeah.
Which totally makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
So here's where it gets fucking...
I see what you're saying here. So what you're saying...
Okay, well, let me paint the picture for people who might not see what I'm saying. Here's what I'm saying. I'm saying that there is a possibility that we have our little fucking planet has been being influenced in some way by some higher intelligence,
right,
that's been compelling us in the direction of technology.
Mm-hmm.
And that the way that the spaceship is coming to Earth is not through a silver orb landing.
It's not in the sky.
It's not coming from the sky. It's going
coming
to,
in your power glove.
It's going to grow through technology into the world. And the way that it's already manifesting and the way the alien is already working its way through us,
right,
is that it's connecting us in the most profound way that has never happened to us before.
Right. And I think that's definitely possible.
So these miracles...
Right.
It's not as though the miracles haven't happened. They're already happening.
They're happening.
Revolutions are being started through Twitter.
They are. All this stuff is all true and all real and all definitely possible. But the problem is there's a lot of people who are still left out of this whole thing. There's huge swaths of the world population that are not a part of this grid. Not a part of the internet. You could say not yet, but there's still a huge amount of them who aren't engaged in technology the same way you and I are. So those people are discounted. And
are they discounted? What do you know about the miracle straw thing?
No, I don't know what the miracle straw thing.
It's this amazing filter that you could stick into like super polluted water,
right,
and suck water out of it, and you goddamn have
it's
clean,
like a boom to
you
clean
have
water.
Clean water.
Yeah.
Now.
But is it being implemented everywhere?
It's coming to existence.
Yeah.
It's coming to existence through research. It's being shared through the medium of the internet and through the ability to transfer information.
It's being
at
shared.
At a super high rate. And it's creating things. Mm-hmm. Here's a new novel thing. There's never, as far as I'm aware, in the course of human history, been a straw that you could stick in stagnant water and get clean water out of.
No, there hasn't. But that doesn't mean... Okay, well, that's the case.
So there's a mini little...
That's a thing,
that's
right.
That's a glorious thing.
Well,
If that happened, what makes you think more and more things like that won't continue to happen at increasing rates as
what's
computers advance?
What's the idea, though? Is the idea to support all life that's on the Earth and to keep growing as a species until we're just like we're all in little soda bottles stacked them next to each other and living in sort of like a virtual colony?
Well,
like
I think that what you,
you
said
have to think
what
about,
you said earlier is a really fucking
people,
smart thing to
okay,
say,
well,
which is that we don't know,
but the whole idea of techno narcissism has to do with if you think of the word narcissism, which is thinking about oneself. So most of that technology that we're talking about, like there are things like that are great, that are straw, like drinking straws, a way to purify water, a way to sanitize using technology.
Or that
and stuff.
New solar panel paint that you can paint on.
Right. Okay. That's a whole separate thing, because when you talk about green energy, people fail to realize that almost all of it comes from petroleum. You need petroleum to, for one thing, to extract your fucking rare earth minerals out of the core of Africa, which China pretty much owns now in terms of mineral
rights.
I don't
give a fuck if it comes from petroleum. If they've got some kind of solar panel paint that I can paint easily, like start constructing
solar
panels.
They can, but to get that, to make that scalable, that's the biggest thing is scalability. And there's still nothing at all right
now
that's scalable. The Volt's a fucking electric car. It's a car.
It's an electric car.
Oh, but that's like that again. Is that's such like a limited like
what
way
are you,
to look at
what
it?
What are you looking for? What is it? It feels more like you're like looking for some kind.
I'm not
of
looking
thing
for anything.
It's happening all around you.
I'm looking from farther away because
We have cars that use a fraction of the gas they used to use.
You don't need a fucking car. Like, a car is, that's like something that is...
I like having a car.
You like having a car, right. It's this thing, it's all these comforts that we've constructed.
What are you, a Luddite? What do you want to go back to living in a fucking mud hut?
I'm not kidding. Maybe not a mud.
Smelling your...
Not a mud hut.
Your foul wife's musty, unwashed vagina.
I'll smell that.
Muddy, lice-covered, filthy hovel.
That's such a fucking bullshit reactive argument to that. Like, that if you don't have technology, you're going to be living in a fucking mud hut. That's not the case.
Well, no, I just think it's funny that you're, like, accusing people who are enthralled and excited about technology is being narcissistic when it sounds
I'm
like
not
you, want,
people of that.
You want to like you want all of humanity
no, I mean,
to,
not accusing
to,
people
to
of that.
Abandon the forward momentum.
That's not what I'm saying at all. That's not all what I'm saying. I'm not saying you should abandon any forward momentum whatsoever. I think you have to look at it as a whole, as opposed to so much technology is a means to an end to do something that really, when you look far enough away, it wasn't even needed. Or
well, what's needed?
Well, that's what it comes down to. What is needed? What do you need? You need water. You need food. You need shelter and community. And that's those are very simple things that we've always had as humans without any technology.
So you're saying what the only thing that's needed is the bare minimum to sustain life and to have some kind of like society.
That is what is needed. If you talk about what people need, yeah, that's true.
And so, that's what you think is what we humans should be going for.
Well, they always have been going for, because that's the nature of like being alive, is you strive to have to provide those things.
Still happening.
Right, it's still happening.
It's being amplified through technology.
It is being amplified through technology. There's a lot of technology, though, that it doesn't look at where it's not acknowledging of how it has come into, how it is birthed. And some of that stuff, a lot of it's totally unsustainable because of the way that the earth is growing and the way that people are growing. And that stuff is all great. It's super great. I'm not saying we should smash machines or anything. I think that people need to think more about the things that they're, the technology, where, how is it coming to be, and what is it doing in terms of, is it propelling something forward that is just, is it crap?
How much information about your garden?
Right.
How much information about gardening have you gotten from the internet?
Not a lot, actually. The best information I've ever got is from talking to people, but that may be because I'm bad at finding it. But I find that that's the most I've learned about.
But
gardening,
you know what I'm
is,
saying, man. I'm saying that, like,
I know. I totally think that
this is what you're doing. You're doing the thing where you're trying to make the tool, give it an ethical standing. Like the gun, like guns are bad.
No, I'm not saying that at all.
Technology's a tool.
Technology does mean tool. That's what it means.
It's a tool.
It's a tool. I agree. But you can't deny the fact that
this tool, it's narcissistic to be wanting to develop or accentuate.
It's narcissistic to just sort of blindly ignore the way the energy comes into our lives, to blindly ignore the source of it and to act like it's never going to end because something is going to just spring up and take care of it for us, which is how most people think, which is how most people who smart and college educated, they tend to think. I even talked to my fucking dad recently, and he's like, they got the tar sands in Alberta, or the shale sands. Like, that's going to fucking save petroleum usage, and it's such a fucking snow job on the count of, like, right now you can turn on the TV and you'll see a commercial from an oil company.
So your concern is that energy's going to run out.
It's not going to run out. Okay, this is the biggest problem with this argument, and this is what pisses me off more than anything, is when people talk about this like I'm talking about, there's this thing where people hear one thing. They hear that's doom, and it's going to run out, and everything's going to be horrible, and it's going to be collapsed, and it's basically saying that the heavens are going to fall and there's going to be an apocalypse,
right.
Which I don't think is the case at all, which is why I don't think it's negative to me to thinking this. It's more positive and reactive and thinking in long terms. It's because it's not going to be an apocalypse. It's just going to be a change, a massive change in the way we have to live that is not – some people – it's going to be so much change that it's going to be hard to deal with for a lot of people.
So what are some things that you would recommend people listening to this start doing to like be to do, take positive action in the direction that you think we should be going in? What can I do?
That's the big question. People always ask that. And I think to some extent, there's not a whole lot you can do because our lives are already so linked to petroleum that it's to like come out of that is like, you know, I think the first thing you can do is kind of acknowledge like that maybe things will to be accepting of the fact that maybe in 15 or 20 years, things will be living differently than how we've become accustomed to. But a lot of those things are frivolous and they're not super important to people to be happy and to live a great life. But as long as you can realize like, oh, you know what, maybe I won't be able to get strawberries in the winter anymore. Like something simple as that. Or maybe I won't be able to there are luxuries that we're so used to now because of fucking baby boomers.
This is just the difference in our views, man, because my opinion is that if you're saying that there's very little we can do outside of a mental kind of a mental sort of acceptance that the future might be grim.
I'm not saying grim. I'm saying different.
Different, but you know, you're not saying grim, but you are. You're doing semantics because you're like in the future.
No, I'm not. It's not semantical. I think
we won't have strawberries in the winter.
That's a very simple idea.
Which, by the way, I could give a fuck. But
I know you can give a fuck. But it's an example.
But what I'm saying is my version of reality, and both of our versions of reality are based on varying lack of understanding of the science that we're getting it from. Your science is coming from books you've read on petroleum.
Right.
My science is coming from books I've read on technology.
I've read those books too, though.
Right. But what I'm saying is we have two competing paradigms.
Yeah.
And because what you're saying is outside of, I guess, what I would have said if someone had asked me, what could we do to get ready for, a potential of reduction in production, but due to lack of oil, I would say
learn to grow vegetables.
Make sure that you have like really strong connections with your friends.
Exactly.
Your community.
Exactly. Those are all real things. Yeah.
I would say conserve energy now. Don't be a nihilist and think that like it's gonna run out. At least like do your part to recycle and conserve energy. Turn your lights off.
Turn your lights off.
So I would say things like that, but still, you can do those things while still having the trussle mindset.
You can. And I don't think this. I don't think they're diabolical.
My mindset, they're not opposed, where my attention
not opposed.
Is turned to, is a glorious future. And a future that right now is growing up around us at this very moment.
And I'm saying exactly the same thing. That what happens when change happens in the future because of things that are out of our control, it makes room. The nature of change is it makes room for great new things, great things, amazing.
That's what we both agree on.
Yes, and I think that's true. And I think that my viewpoint on this has changed in the past, like not that long ago, from reading some new stuff about how it's definitely not a bad thing. It's only a good thing. It's just that some people who are backward and have always been backward, has always been backward, ignorant people, and those are the people who get fucked by change.
Well, it's the right. And that is, I think, you know what? Here's another thing we could both agree on then. Perhaps the, aside from like growing vegetables and starting a Pemberton Victory Garden out in your backyard, you can begin to try to open yourself up to not resisting the normal changes that happen every day in your life.
Exactly.
You know, and that is an interesting...
I think it's all part of the same thing.
So
I really do.
You will run into people who... This is to bring it out of the kind of ethereal level that it's at right now. I want to bring it down to a day-to-day life.
Right.
Sometimes you'll run into people who have an expectation of how they think you should be.
Well, everybody, actually.
Right.
Anytime, ever.
Sometimes you'll be around people who become disappointed in you because you don't meet their expectations. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the way those people react varies, but it's in two broad categories. One, when you don't meet someone's expectations, they're like cool with it and they forgive you and they like adapt to like, oh, okay, that's the way things are.
Right.
Or two, they get fucking pissed and they try to control you and they get mad.
What's an example of this? I don't feel like...
It's like
I don't think about it
when you
way.
Offend someone. When somebody wants to hang out with you and you can't hang out with them, and they're like pissed. Like so, you know, in
pissed.
Boyfriend girlfriend relationship, right. it really happens all the time.
Very clear.
So it's like the practice is that when someone's not meeting your expectations, for example, if you're like I was in Montreal at some bar and this drunk asshole was talking to me.
Is he a fan?
No. Oh, he was just some drunk at a bar. He's being a loud. He's being a dick.
Being a drunk.
He's being a drunk, being a dick to everybody. Right. Kind of an aggressive drunk, maybe looking for a fight.
Ooh.
So he's like talking to me and he's like doing this sloppy. He's, by the way, way too drunk to fight even me. Like he's like really like there's
Have
no
you
way.
Ever been in a fight?
Yeah.
I've never been in a fight before, you know that?
But the point is when this guy's being a cunt.
Right.
At that moment, that person is not meeting the expectation you'd like to have of normal people, right?
No, they're disappointing
and
you.
And so it's creating inside of you this vicious response. You want, like, inside of me, the animal part of me is
wanting to kill.
Definitely.
Wants to kill in quotes.
You want to start firing back barbs. So someone shoots a barb at you, and then you want to fire back barbs at them to get revenge. And then they want to fire back barbs at you.
Because they just got hit in the fear.
Right. So this is
more chaos.
Israel. This is the Gaza happening right now. That's a big example of this.
Classic example.
So
it's anti-Zen.
To get ready for this upcoming change, we have to start getting better at not being reactive to when our expectations are met.
Couldn't agree with more. That is the most important principle of all, is that you basically have to just disengage and be like, I'm a fucking leaf on the river, man.
Relax.
You gotta relax. That's
like
the biggest thing.
Yes.
Relax.
And you can do this thing. Like I've done it on Twitter a few times. I've done it on Twitter twice now where someone's like
says something shitty
nasty
to you, right?
Thing to me. Yeah. And then I, rather than firing back at them, will respond either being funny with them and like being kind to them, and then they'll fire back something mean again.
Exactly.
And then
yeah.
I'll fire back something
just fucking
kind,
absorb it and spit it back
out. And then all of a sudden
up.
They're like, man, you're really funny. I really like you. Now you've created a new
you've taken the bad and made it good.
Event.
Yeah.
Alchemy.
Yep.
You've converted this shit into something beautiful. And man,
instead of
if you want to talk about alternate resources, if you want to talk about that, the hope or the dream is that technology or some other thing will do that very same phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called that's the dream of the fucking dumping garbage in and it turns into something that fuels a car.
What's that thing called on the Back to the Future car? It's like such.
That's it.
What's that thing called on the back?
I was going to mention the Back to the Future.
What's it called?
Machine.
It has such a great name.
I don't remember. But dude,
it's that. You put
here's
the fucking
what I'm
garbage
saying.
In it, you can travel through time.
On your level, wherever you're at in life right now, you start trying to convert the negative phenomena around you into good phenomena. You are, on some small level, engaging.
You're creating energy.
In what we hope. Yeah, you're converting.
You're creating
energy.
Yeah, you're converting energy, which is a big deal.
Which is a big fucking deal.
And that is where that's true energy. It's not something that you can burn or it's actual real energy.
It's fucking real, and it manifests in the form of circumstance. You know,
right.
And the more that you control that fucking desire to lash out.
Yeah, it's a weird thing when you like I don't know. I think some of it has to do with getting older. When you get older, you sort of, as you get older, you see that isn't, you see the outcome of just being negative back, and you realize nothing good will come of this. You only get more angry.
Deeper in the quicksand.
When you just reply with, when you can just be above something. I think that's a big word. It is a big word. The word magnanimous. I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that word, I looked it up the other day because I was using it a lot. I wanted to make sure I was using it right. That is like the ultimate word to be. Is if you can describe someone as magnanimous, that's like, I think about that a lot. If I think I'm driving, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to be, I think about myself, what if I was just hundreds of feet? What if I was gigantic? If you're massive, if you're totally magnanimous and massive, you're unaffected by things that are like so small. You just, all you can do, you're so unaffected, but in like a happy, blissful way. You're just this big, you're just a giant fucking rock, and all you can do is just, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
And someone comes firing an arrow at you, oh, I'm sorry.
It's the best.
Yeah,
you just—it's the best. And when you get around people like that,
oh, they glow.
They glow. They're glowing. You change.
Yeah,
like when you
get sucked into that glow, yeah. And you start to like glom onto it, and you become. That's the thing. That's why when you meet someone who's truly magnanimous like that, it's a. That's who leads armies and things like that. Or
well, yeah, or yeah, or
leads societies or yeah.
That's like when somebody like creates the, you know, all of a sudden like there's this weird electromagnetic effect,
yeah.
But it's happening in society around this person or this idea.
Right.
And that leads to stuff, man. Mm-hmm. And what that leads to, you know what? Here's the bottom line. If you are an unhappy son of a bitch and you come into contact with a super advanced, all intelligent machine, you're still going to be an unhappy son of a bitch, probably. You know what I mean? Like, you're still going to be... This is something the Hare Krishnas would say. They'd mm-hmm. say... They call it heaven. They would say there's different spiritual planets or there's different higher levels of, like, existence in the universe. And that in each of these different levels of existence, the Hindus in general, or a lot of in Hinduism, they get very weirdly mathematical about...
They do.
Very mystical
stuff.
It's very
specific, right?
Yeah, strangely specific. And so there was actually like almost a mathematical formula for how many times more pleasure is on these different planes of existence.
Okay, it's like an exponent, so, huh?
Exponentially increasing levels of pleasure. But this, I remember this Hare Krishna monk said to me, he's like, but you know, man, if people just jumped into those levels, they wouldn't enjoy it.
Because it would be, you have to climb into it, right? Is that it?
Well, you have to develop your palate, so to speak. You know, you have to be able to start understanding.
It's like when you're eating, if you're interested in like fine food, you can't just, it's like I could guzzle a really nice wine and I wouldn't know the difference because my palate's not developed.
That's it.
But when it is developed, it's like excruciatingly pleasurable to drink something that's like this however many tens of years old that's been perfectly crafted with the winds of the sea and this.
if I take a super happy person, and by happy I mean in my hippie way of saying it, they've completely opened their heart up to love and they feel in love with the world. And I take that person and I pluck them from my futuristic techno-narcissistic universe where anything you think you can immediately have, we're all super connected. There's some kind of neurological interface that lets you feel the experience of all beings at once. If I take that happy person and I put them into a reality where there's no electricity and there's just, I don't know, the distraction mechanisms are no longer there anymore. And if they are, it's very small. That person's still going to be happy. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because what's inside of you is more important. What
do you think there would be, though? I don't know.
Yeah.
So you're talking about plucking someone out of the matrix from the future.
I'm saying once
the pleasure matrix from the future.
The ultimate technology is love.
Which is never, it was always been around, and it's in the moment. Right now is the best moment. This moment right now is the best. It's not going to get better. It's never been this good.
Yeah.
It's always, it's right now.
That's
so
it.
That's, I think that kind of, well, that is in essence the opposite of techno-narcissism because it's about this idea of the F future with a capital F. Like things will be so much greater, so much better. But so what's something wrong with right now? Is it bad? Are you unhappy? You know?
No, I'm
You're not. You're in the moment and you're happy. You love this moment. It's a great moment.
Not only am I fucking happy, but it's like...
I'm not saying you. I'm saying like you.
Well, technology is enhancing this moment.
It is. It is.
We're recording this awesome podcast and we're going to get to blast it out to a bunch of people. And that's fucking exciting and fun.
It is exciting and fun. It's great.
So it's enhancing it.
It's enhancing it, but it's still the most... If you want to say... I mean, this is something that you always talk about as the... idea, isn't that a core tenet to Buddhism and similar religions, is that you have to be in the moment. And when you live in the moment, that's when you live best because you're living in this place. That's what enlightenment is, and that's why enlightenment's so fucking hard.
Enlightenment is enlightenment, I don't know what it
is. It's the supreme moment. You are...
Yeah.
It's just the fucking, everything clicks. It's every sound at the same time.
It's like, you're in this state of like, so it's like, okay, this
is,
I have theories on what enlightenment is. I don't know what it is. And a lot of people that I think are super smart say, just don't even think about enlightenment because it's a waste of time. But, But just for the sake of fun, by the way, anyone who says don't think about something, it's a waste of time, can suck my dick.
Yeah.
Because so many things that are a waste of time are very fun to think about.
Oh, yeah.
But the idea is that, okay, so I give you, so a novel thing happens. I think the best example of a novel thing happening is when you fall in love in the beginning with someone.
I thought you were about to say fall over. When like you fall down.
Yeah.
That's pretty novel, though.
When you meet someone and you start connecting with them and those weird love sparks start
happening.
It's pure novelty. Your whole universe changes. Right. Everything brightens up.
Mm-hmm.
So my theory on enlightenment would be that begins to happen in your life, minus the necessity of any external thing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it makes total sense. You're just in, you're just like the bell is ringing all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, it's yeah. That.
That's it. It's, and that's going to change your action, and that's going to change the things you say.
Mm-hmm. It's like always being on stage and killing.
Yeah.
That to me is like, that is where I feel the most enlightened, is when I'm in the moment, on stage talking, and things are great. And it's like, I feel like that's like drawing lightning from your down from the heavens and spraying it with your fingertips.
Yeah. Yeah.
You basically feel like you could get shot and it would just go through you.
Yes.
Or it would cease to be a bullet. It just disappears.
It's the greatest feeling ever, man. And, yeah. And it gives you a sense of like almost that you're not even you. It's a sense of like,
yeah, you're not there. You're out of your body in a way, because you're just in your mind, because you're.
Yeah.
You know that? Do you know who Big Youth is?
No.
Ja Youth. He's this reggae. He's a DJ. I saw him live once. It's still like this, the greatest live thing I've ever seen. But this is the guy who's like that. Who's like, you look at this guy. He's like in his 50s, 56. He has this long white beard. And he is like, he's that way. You watch him and you see this person who is so, like, he's looking so many miles beyond everything. It's like this, he has this power.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think there's very few people like I've ever seen that way, but that's, I saw him performing and I'm like, oh, how amazing it would be to walk around with that like fucking blaster ray of a vision that you can just look through everything. You just, everything turns to gold in your eyes because you're just, yeah, you're anointed. You're like an alien.
You know what people would say, man? They would say that the thing you're seeing in him is a reflection of what's in you, and that you can only see what's inside of
really?
You. And people like that are only acting as reflections of the perfection inside of you.
Well, that's great. I would love to. Yeah, I like that idea. That's good.
I love that idea too. That's good, man. It's the best. Whoa! Holy shit! What a great. This is really fucking dug deep. Johnny Pemberton, mm-hmm. You have an incredible podcast.
Yep, you've been on it.
Twisting the Wind. I've been
Check
on an
out.
Episode. You do a combination of interviews. You also do, there's a musical element.
There's a musical
you
element.
You also do prank calls.
I do. I wouldn't call them prank calls so much, just phone calls. But yeah, they're kind of pranky sometimes.
They're great.
Yeah, I had a really good one lately. I've been hitting some real good nodes.
What'd you have?
Well, the one on your episode is one of the better ones, but There's a bunch. I tend to forget them because I tend to forget so much stuff I've done on there. But there was one where I talked to this lady who worked at a catalog place in Vermont, and she's like, I don't know. She seemed kind of stupid, but then she's just totally called out all these things I was saying. It's funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you remember what episode that's in?
I don't remember.
Well, email it to me and I'll put it up.
I will.
And guys, follow Johnny on Twitter at Johnny Pemberton.
Yeah.
And, remember, people, if an alien descends from the sky in a burning chariot, or an alien ascends from the technological singularity,
or if it comes out of a fucking toilet,
you're not going to be able to enjoy it if you've got diarrhea inside of you, in your heart.
Right.
Or inside of you in general.
I do have diarrhea problems, but I think... that's a different thing. That's a medical problem.
Clear it, guys.
Have you ever heard the idea that people who go to the bathroom a lot, who have to defecate a lot, are closer to death because your shit is basically the closest physical embodiment of death that isn't a dead body?
That's the best fucking wrap up I've ever had for this podcast. Please follow Johnny Pemberton on Twitter.
Bye.
Hare Krishna.
God bless
all of you. We love you very much. May we all merge together. May we be the awakening machine.
If not, I got a great bug out location. I really do. I'm going to tell you about it. Hit the stop button.
That was the amazing Johnny Pemberton. Follow him on Twitter. It's at Johnny Pemberton. And if you like the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, why not go leave a nice review over at iTunes? It pushes us up in the ratings, which doesn't, I don't even know what that does. And come see me this November 20th and 21st. I will be in Seattle and Portland. You are listening to We Will All Become Silhouettes by the Postal Service. And it's the Shins doing a cover. Buy the album on iTunes. See you later. Hare Krishna.
The air.